Hi, and welcome to the Good Health Podcast. I'm your host, Nicole Good, a registered nutritional therapy practitioner and functional medicine practitioner. Join me as we explore thyroid, brain, and fatigue conditions with positivity. From Hashimoto's to multiple sclerosis, chronic fatigue to adrenal dysfunction, I've got you covered. With expert advice and tips to help you take action now and inspiring real patient stories from successful individuals who refuse to let their health hold them back. Start your journey to good health today. And don't forget to come and join the conversation on Instagram at good_health. That's G-O-O-D-E. Or visit my website at nicolegoodhealth.com to find out more. Today, we welcome Emily Barker to the Good Health Podcast. Emily is a certified registered nutritionist and a fertility expert. She's completed the Making Babies Naturally year-long fertility training and mentorship and is a Fertility Nutrition Center accredited practitioner. Emily believes in the power of nature, the power of the female body, and that everything you need to heal is already inside you. She likes to take complex science and a heavy subject matter and make it accessible, approachable, playful, and ultimately enriching. And she has helped countless women achieve their dream of becoming a mother. Today, we're going to have a conversation around trimester zero, the preconception, and trimester four, postnatal stage, the two most forgotten and least talked about times within the fertility journey. Let's join the conversation. So Emily, welcome to the Good Health Podcast. It's great to have you here today.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so I'm really looking forward to this conversation. And, you know, like I said, it is this sort of slightly different area of pregnancy. We always think of like the three trimesters. So why don't you just kickstart by, let's start with trimester zero. Why don't you kickstart and tell us what we're talking about when we're talking about trimester zero, what that actually means?
Yeah, you know, when it comes to, you know, planning for a family, getting pregnant, most people jump right in and they're not really kind of thinking about preconception phase. So when we're talking about trimester zero, we're thinking about the time prior to conception. So generally, we're thinking about a three-month period, and that's the maturation cycle of an egg. So obviously, as women, we're born with all the eggs we're ever going to have. And, you know, even further back than that, you know, our mother and our grandmother kind of carried our eggs in them as well. These eggs obviously are with us for all of our lives, but kind of prior to ovulation, the 3 months before that is the kind of maturation phase where the eggs are maturing, and kind of most of kind of what we attribute to kind of quality is happening. So that kind of trimester zero, you know, we're talking about that 3 months, but actually, you know, it can be longer, and ideally it's longer than that. So it's really thinking and taking a step back before, you know, we plan to conceive, to look at getting our bodies in the best place possible for conception. So yeah, that's kind of what we're thinking about when we talk about trimester zero.
Let's just look at what you said there, because I love that fact that our grandmothers carried us. I think that's really interesting. Can you just sort of explain that a little bit? Because some people may not know this as a fact. I know it's something we got taught when we were studying, but some people may not know this. But it's like, it's this idea that all our eggs are already there. So your grandmother, you as an egg, was actually already in your grandma.
Yeah, exactly. Which is wild, isn't it? It's really crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it, to think about it like that.
Yeah. And I think, you know, we're learning more and more about this epigenetic piece, what kind of our grandmother was exposed to, and our grandma actually, you know, in a way is impacting on our health and, you know, our fertility as well. So I think, you know, that's another really important thing to kind of think about in trimester zero, that it's not just about conceiving and obviously hopefully conceiving relatively easily, but it's also about planning for the health of the future generation, because what we are doing, what we're exposed to in that 3 months, actually, you know, not only sets us up for healthy conception pregnancy, but also the health of that baby. Baby's baby, you know, and female as well. So it's so important. And it's something I think people don't think about, and it is kind of forgotten. It's all the focus is on pregnancy and not really on kind of preconception.
Maybe the women that, maybe men as well, but the people that think of that preconception stage are maybe the ones who are struggling to get pregnant. So they are forced to think about that stage. But like you said there, it's not just about conception, is it? There's a lot more involved and a lot more reasons to look at this phase.
Yeah. So, you know, even if obviously nobody knows that they're going to have fertility issues before they kind of start trying, but, you know, even if you don't know that you're kind of having those struggles, you know, just because you could get pregnant straight away doesn't necessarily mean that it's a great idea just to jump into that preparation work. And a study or some data that was released, I think it was Tommy's charity did a study, and it said that most couples spend more time planning for a holiday than they do for a pregnancy, which
that's wild. That's amazing, isn't it, really, when you think about that?
Yeah, actually growing a human, you know, it's a big deal. It's not necessarily anyone's fault because it's not something we're taught or educated about. And
yeah,
obviously infertility, you know, there's lots of research around that. But in terms of, I guess, women's health in general and like pregnancy, postpartum, preconception, there's not tons of research. There is more coming to the fore. And I think there was something recent actually that showed that 90% of women don't have adequate nutrients needed for conception and pregnancy.
That's unbelievable, isn't it? That's really unbelievable. That's such a high amount.
Yeah. And going into a pregnancy in a depleted state is just going to have a huge knock-on effect on, you know, your health. You know, generally, baby gets everything it needs because kind of how it works, but it really will be at the kind of detriment to mum. So really putting in that work to get your nutrient stores, get your body and your health in a really good place before you conceive is obviously going to stand you in really good stead, whether you're, you know, struggling to conceive or not.
Yeah, and I think that's why it's really good to have this sort of conversation, because you know, I work with a lot of women who are at that age where they are thinking about getting pregnant or wanting to get pregnant, or it happens maybe without them too much planning. But I work with a lot of women at that sort of stage of life, and I think it is really important to raise this awareness, because like you said, you know, there isn't really much out there unless we're talking about infertility or IVF or, you know, that sort of thing. Then obviously it gets talked about, but outside of that, you really don't hear much around this sort of area of pregnancy, do you? It is. I know we said right at the beginning there, you know, we mentioned sort of the forgotten trimesters, and it is sort of forgotten. It does feel like it gets. I mean, I don't work in the fertility world like you do, but even to me, looking in from the outside, it does feel like it gets neglected. And it isn't focused on for everyone. It's focused on as though it's almost like that subset of people who are struggling should look at this, but other people maybe necessarily need to. And that feels really sad. It's a shame for women's health that's the case.
It is, especially, you know, when you look at 9 out of 10 women or 90% of women don't have enough nutrients. And those aren't, you know, women that are struggling with infertility. Those, you know, that's the kind of general population. It's actually really important.
And you do see, because you said there, you know, it's like the mother's health that suffers. And I see a lot of people coming into clinic to me where they've started with something like autoimmune or a thyroid problem or something like this postpartum. That is, it's a time where some of these things can trigger. And if mum is not healthy going into pregnancy, or when we say not healthy, I mean doesn't have all those nutrients that they necessarily need for pregnancy rather than being ill, there's more chance of these things developing as well as postpartum issues, I guess. You know, it is really important that everybody does really work on this stage and focuses on it. So how early on, I know you mentioned the maturation of the egg timeframe there, but how early on would you like to see, as somebody who is a fertility expert and, you know, really knows their stuff in this field, how early on would you like to see somebody starting to think about this preconception phase?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, as early as possible, you know, 6 months to a year out, ideally, just to kind of really start being a bit more mindful about the choices that you're making in terms of really obvious things like alcohol, caffeine, and kind of, you know, obviously reducing those type of things. It does depend on kind of what's going on. So obviously, if you're someone that knows you've got lots of issues around your menstrual cycle, and, you know, maybe you don't have regular periods, or, you know, there's kind of niggling symptoms there, as definitely as early as possible. So maybe don't start trying to kind of look at that when you're trying to conceive. You know, ideally, if that's the case, looking at, you know, a year before, 6 months before, trying to work with an acupuncturist or, you know, a functional nutritionist or someone that can help get those cycles working properly ahead of trying to conceive. And I think, you know, for the general population, obviously, if you have regular cycles and you don't know, you know, that you have any fertility issues, it really can't hurt to do as much preparation as you can. And I think just getting that basic blood work, looking at your ferritin, your iron stores, things like B12, folates, vitamin D, because it does take time as well to correct those kind of sorts of insufficiencies or deficiencies. Ideally, you know, kind of 6 months ahead of wanting to try and get pregnant, got very low vitamin D, you've got enough time to correct that and work on that before you kind of get pregnant. I think another thing as well, you know, if you do have low levels and you conceive straight away, you're very limited in pregnancy in terms of dosages and things like that to fully be able to correct those. Obviously, you want to be kind of flagging those things up prior to getting pregnant. So if you do need, you know, a high dose of vitamin D, you can do that and you're going to set yourself and baby up for kind of success if you're kind of correcting that rather than finding out in pregnancy that it's low and not kind of being able to fully correct that, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And is it ever too late? Obviously, once you're pregnant, trimester zero is gone. So obviously that is too late. But I guess what I mean by that is it still worth somebody trying to do these things, even if it's a few months out, you know, or, you know, a month out even? Or does it really need to be 6-12 months to see the benefits? Is it still in a short, even if it's a very short space of time, is there still things that they can do that would still benefit trimester zero phase?
Yeah. And I think obviously, you know, I think this is, you know, most people are aware of the folate or folic acid and needing to be taking that well in advance. And, you know, same with vitamin D, I know, you know, general GPs, and they will be recommending that to patients. But yeah, you know, taking a really good quality prenatal at least 3 months, but, you know, even starting to take it a month before is going to help things. But yeah, I think for everybody, because of that, you know, neural shoe and the kind of spina bifida risk of, you know, not having adequate levels of folate early pregnancy. And that's kind of happening, you know, weeks into a pregnancy. So it's not something, it needs to be right kind of prior to pregnancy. But yeah, that is more, well, it is very kind of widespread and is the kind of the general NHS information for women. But, you know, folic acid isn't the only nutrient that's important for pregnancy. And I think, you know, there's so many nutrients, again, don't kind of get looked at or forgotten about. You know, vitamin D, folate, so important. But, you know, there's things like iron, that's one that I see low all of the time in my female clients. You know, I think majority of my clients don't have kind of optimal levels of iron, and lots of them have quite low levels. If you, you know, get your levels checked in the NHS, unless they're deficient, they don't kind of recommend supporting that or supplementation. But again, going into pregnancy, your iron needs are hugely raised, you know, especially in the kind of later trimesters, you know, you're kind of creating a blood supply for another human. Like, I think, if you think about it, you're creating organs, you're growing organs, you're growing bones, you're growing like a human. And, you know, I think it's just really underestimated how much in terms of macronutrients is needed to kind of do that. It is like running a marathon. I think lots of things, like pregnancy is incredibly taxing on the body in so many ways, and nobody would go into a marathon without training, without looking at their nutrition. But we do it for pregnancy, and it's the same, you know, it's no less of a feat for the body.
Yeah.
So yeah, you know, things like iron, things like selenium, iodine, the B12, there's loads of, you know, really important vitamin A that are needed, and it's not something that, you know, is necessarily planned for or thought about, especially if we're just kind of obviously advising women just to take folic acid and vitamin D. There's lots more, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So what things would you, let's say somebody came to work with you in this preconception phase, what sort of things would you want them to be doing? You know, are we talking, you've talked a little bit there about like supplementation, are there like, you know, is it like sort of a case of a mix of diet things, supplementation things, testing, you know, what sort of things would you be wanting people to do to support themselves during that phase?
Yeah, well, in my clinic, I am generally working with the people that are struggling to get pregnant. And, you know, I do sometimes have the odd couple that will come to kind of optimize things in advance. But generally, you know, it's couples that are struggling to get pregnant. So, you know, we're looking at getting to the bottom of what getting in the way. You know, sometimes they will kind of have specific diagnosis, perhaps PCOS or endometriosis. But a lot of the time it's the kind of unexplained infertility diagnosis, which, you know, essentially means they haven't found the reason why that couple aren't falling pregnant. You know, male factor is a huge one of the reasons, you know, I see that a lot. It's 50% contributes to 50% of infertility cases. I'm looking at getting to the bottom of, you know, why that couple potentially aren't falling pregnant. Might be, you know, kind of looking at things like progesterone and thyroid, the kind of things that you see very clearly that, you know, that's not in the place it needs to be for healthy conception. But then we're kind of getting a bit into the more nuanced areas. So, you know, looking at microbiome health. So there's lots and lots of research and more kind of coming to the fore about how microbiomes impact fertility, you know, the vaginal or seminal microbiome, the gut microbiome, obviously, which is kind of a more established one, and oral microbiome. So, you know, all of these things we're learning, you know, that they are connected obviously to health, but also to our fertility. So in quite a lot of cases, we're looking at optimizing those, looking at the gut, kind of seeing what's happening there. The vaginal microbiome, I think that's getting quite a lot of airtime now. And I think a lot of more people are kind of learning that there is an ecosystem there in certain microorganisms, certain infections can impact conception and pregnancy, can raise the risk of things like preterm birth, miscarriage. A lot of the time we are kind of looking at those microbiomes, seeing what's there, working on getting rid of what we don't want to be there, and then optimizing the good levels of beneficial bacteria that, you know, we know want to be there for healthy conception. And then, yeah, kind of really, you know, aside from getting to the bottom of things, we're optimizing health and kind of nutrient stores for healthy conception. So yeah, I do look at levels of nutrients and sometimes running a kind of really comprehensive look at the whole spectrum of nutrients. Particularly, I think, you know, I do have some clients that have secondary infertility. So they have potentially gone into a first pregnancy without preparation, gone through a pregnancy, gone through the kind of whole postpartum, and been talking about, I think, how much that kind of does strip the body of micronutrients, kind of, yeah, you know, going into another pregnancy. Often I think nutrient levels will be kind of in the toilet, I don't know a better word.
Yeah, and you don't think about it being sort of the impact on second pregnancy, because we do, you know, generally, you know, people have their children in a relatively small space of time most of the time. Some people do have them further apart, but there's probably a big percentage of people where they do have the pregnancies relatively close together in there. If you look at their whole lifespan, it's usually within a sort of a window. And you don't think about the impact that actually a first pregnancy will have had on the body and how that would impact that preconception stage for a second pregnancy. Like I hadn't thought of that, but that's really, it's interesting.
Yeah, it's a lot. You know, you think the body like has been in service to another human for so long, and yeah, it really, really does take its toll on the stores of nutrients. So yeah, you know, essentially with my clients in my clinic, mainly we're trying to get to the bottom of things, hopefully correct those things if anything crops up, and then really kind of optimize everything through diet and lifestyle and kind of really getting a super nutrient dense diet in place to,
yeah,
get the body up and prepare them for pregnancy.
I know you said that a lot of what you do is for the people who obviously are struggling, and we've talked about how that's usually when people talk about this preconception phase. Would you like to see more people in clinic who are coming to you because they're thinking they want to get pregnant and they're doing it to optimize as opposed to because there's a problem?
I would absolutely love that. I think, you know, if we could get to a place where we're thinking along those lines of, okay, want to, you know, plan for a baby, let's take 3 to 6 months of really, you know, looking at what we're putting in our bodies, what we're exposed to, how we're living, you know, I think that would, in terms of a healthy population, it's going to really kind of stand us in really good stead for kind of the future generations and health. Because, yeah, it does have that knock-on effect. And also, you know, kind of learning those, how to really nourish yourself, how to take care of yourself, you know, learning about your nutrition, that's going to get passed on to the future generations as well. So I think it's such a valuable thing to kind of take time to learn about yourself, learn about your body, learn how to really nourish yourself. Yeah.
You have the Fertile Foods Essentials course, don't you, that you run, which I guess would be perfect for people that are wanting to do this, that are wanting to prepare their body for pregnancy.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, that course is beginner's kind of intro into all of the things in terms of food. So kind of learning about your body, how it works, how your hormones work, how you know, we can really get our bodies in the best place possible, you know, prior to kind of conception. And it has, you know, meal plans to support you with that. And it's a kind of like a mini course essentially, and super accessible. So yeah, that would be a great thing, I think, for anybody who's planning to conceive and, you know, in the next year or so.
Great. You know, you've talked a little bit there about the, you know, sort of the improvements in further down the line, sort of for future generations, you know, and that sort of side of things. But if somebody takes these steps in, you know, trimester zero, in this preconception phase, what improvements would you expect to sort of see within pregnancy if people work on these steps? What are the things that people, you know, we can expect to see in terms of, you know, the next 9 months that are coming up?
Yeah, it's have it going in with really good stores. Again, you might not notice that you're feeling the benefit, but if you don't do it, you will notice, you know, having issues with energy levels, you know, low levels of nutrients, you know, anemia, things like that. Also gestational diabetes, doing that work prior to conception to really balance your blood sugars and learn how to balance your meals. It kind of really sets you up for a really low risk of things like gestational diabetes and, you know, any of the risks that come with pregnancy, getting the body in a, you know, a really great place in that trimester zero just lowers your risk of running into complications in pregnancy. So you might, because obviously you might not have been pregnant before, you might not know the difference, but, you know, if you don't, you know, you've got low levels of nutrients and you're going into it in not a great place, then I think, you know, you're more likely to have a more difficult pregnancy. So it's just about setting yourself up to have the smoothest ride that you can, if that makes sense.
Yeah, which I think everybody going into pregnancy wants, but maybe just doesn't realise that there's things that they can do to work on that and help benefit that. So if people are listening to this who are struggling to conceive, I know we've touched on how they tend to be the people that sort of reach out. If there's people that are struggling to conceive, or, you know, they're listening to this, they have been finding it difficult, what are the things you see are the sort of the primary things that, I guess, come to the forefront with you working with clients that can cause issues with people getting pregnant?
It's a real mix of things, and often it's a combination of things. You know, I think rarely it's just like one thing that you're like, oh, it's that, and then you correct it. You know, sometimes it is, but
same with autoimmunity. I always say the same thing. Everybody's like, well, what's my root cause? What's causing it? I'm like, there won't be one. Don't expect one. We're going to find lots of things here. You know, it's always the way, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And often people kind of tend to think about fertility as a reproductive system issue. And, you know, they think, okay, well, how does that affect my ovaries or conception? You know, people kind of don't tend to understand that it actually is a whole body event. So, you know, it's,
yeah,
your reproductive system and your reproductive hormones are plugged into what's happening in the wider body. So it's complex, and often, particularly if there are things like PCOS or endometriosis, it's a kind of body-wide issue, and it's not necessarily just affecting the reproductive system. And I think the kind of common things that I see, obviously thyroid dysfunction, so, you know, hypothyroid is quite common, and generally that probably won't crop up on its own either. As I say, male factor, so that crops up very regularly.
And again, that's one that sort of gets forgotten quite a bit, isn't it? We generally, when we talk about pregnancy, the focus is around the woman, and yeah, people forget that, you know, there's two parties to it. The other side needs looking at as well.
Yeah, and sometimes if there is a known issue on female side, so, you know, maybe there is endometriosis or PCOS or something like that, the male isn't thought about, and sometimes it's both, and that's missed if there's kind of a low AMH diagnosis, you know, all the kind of focus is on that. And sometimes things like, you know, actually thoroughly checking the male side kind of gets missed. You know, I do see a lot of nutrient deficiencies, low levels of nutrients, progesterone. I've got lots of clients at the moment with low progesterone or kind of luteal phase issues. It's really common. And again, there can be lots of reasons, but I think, you know, one of the big drivers for that, I think, is the stress piece. And I think we're going to see that more and more, because I just, you know, I don't know about you, you probably see it in your clinic as well, but I think, you know, since COVID, modern life is very stressful, but I feel like with everything going on in the world and post-COVID, it's getting worse.
I talk about that stress piece all the time. It's such a big root cause for all the autoimmune stuff, for, you know, optimizing people's health. I work with it a lot. I was actually reading some research this morning. I talk about it a lot the book that I'm writing at the moment, but I read some research this morning. Actually, I've got it here somewhere. I had it out. And health handouts, so what it's going to cost the economy, will this year, currently, what it costs the economy, and this is just stress-related health issues, so nothing else, just stress-related health issues. Currently this year is costing £65.7 billion to the economy. By 2028, they reckon that's going to have risen. The estimate is that will have risen to £90.9 billion. So that, I mean, you know, it's a huge increase. It not only is £65 billion is already a huge amount anyway. I mean, it's already a massive problem to today as we are. But that's going to rise by a ridiculous amount in the next few years and hit that sort of £90 billion. I mean, that's crazy. And that is just stress-related issues. You know, there's obviously a lot of other issues as well that will be costing things, you know, a lot of other health conditions, but anything that is stress related, that, you know, that's a huge amount of money that it's costing. And stress has such an impact on so many different things. I talk about this a lot because I'm seeing it as, you know, in my clinic, I'm seeing it as a massive trigger for, you know, all the sort of suboptimal health or autoimmune conditions, low immune function, you know, all of these sorts of things. So it's interesting that it's a pregnancy thing as well. You know, it impacts everything, doesn't it? Stress just impacts our whole body.
It is a tricky one in the kind of fertility context, because obviously with anything, it's very difficult to, you know, attribute A equals B, you know, stress equals infertility. It's so much more complex than that. But, you know, it definitely plays a part. And trying for a baby is really stressful. And then, you know, trying for a baby and not succeeding is incredibly stressful in itself. And then obviously add to that, you know, everything else that's going on in the world and just modern, you know, it's a lot. And I see it a lot, and that's something I, you know, work with all of my clients. But yeah, so progesterone, I see that a lot, low progesterone. Obviously things like endometriosis and PCOS. I think endometriosis is getting more and more, it's getting more and more common. I think it's just being diagnosed better and we know more about it. And I also do have an inkling that, kind of again, post-COVID, we're still discovering kind of how that has impacted the body. And I think, you know, in terms of triggering inflammatory conditions and...
Yeah, I'm seeing a lot more. We're definitely seeing a lot more in terms of autoimmune being triggered. You know, those inflammatory immune conditions and things like that. So it doesn't surprise me that it's the same for, you know, things like endometriosis. Yeah.
And that's just an inkling. Obviously, I'm not basing that on any data. I know that we have it yet. But I just, you know, I think we're still learning, aren't we, about the impact it's had. And I think in terms of gynecological issues and fertility, the initial research isn't kind of showing anything, you know, major in terms of it affecting fertility directly. But yeah, I wonder in terms of things like endometriosis, if we are going to see an increase in those kind of inflammatory conditions.
So let's talk about, you know, at the beginning we said we're going to talk about these two forgotten trimesters. So let's talk about the other one. Let's talk about the fourth trimester. First of all, like, explain to us what we're talking about when we say the fourth trimester. What time period are we talking about?
Yeah, so we're talking about postpartum. So we're talking about after giving birth. And again, I think, you know, trimester zero obviously, you know, isn't thought about. But I think, you know, we know postpartum is a transition, is a period that, you know, women go through after giving birth. And it's really not given the attention and the research that it needs, really. And the kind of pregnancy is the focus, and, you know, eating well in pregnancy, making sure the baby gets everything, and then focusing on birth. And then kind of once the baby is here, people don't necessarily think that, oh, okay, the baby's here, I can kind of just go back to baseline.
I think mum gets forgotten a bit, doesn't she, as well? Because, you know, baby's here, baby's taking up, quite rightly, taking up a lot of time, and is, you know, maybe not sleeping and, you know, and all of this sort of stuff, and needs feeding. And you know, so baby comes first, especially for mum. You know, mum's got to put baby first. And does kind of, you know, mum almost gets forgotten about a little bit, I think, at this time. But actually, she's still been through a huge change and is still going through huge changes, and is also now not getting much sleep and having to feed a baby, you know, none of these things that are still putting pressures on the body.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's I think it's the biggest, well, it is the biggest transition that a kind of woman will go for physically, emotionally, mentally. And your body in pregnancy has gone through enormous, enormous changes in terms of, you know, hormonally, you know, all your kind of tissues and, you know, have literally changed to kind of accommodate growing baby. Your thyroid has supported a baby. It will need to completely remodel kind of postpartum. You know, obviously birth is, and it's again, it's another marathon. You know, essentially you've just run two marathons. You've given birth, maybe you've lost a lot of blood during birth. You know, you'll definitely will have lost, you know, a lot of energy and kind of nutrients in that process. And yeah, there's just continual pull from the mother's nutritional resources in pregnancy. Yeah, you've got a baby, you are obviously adjusting to that enormous, enormous adjustment and transition, and obviously learning how to, you know, take care of a tiny human. And then your body is trying to recover. You know, you're obviously akin to running two marathons, and now you know, you're not getting much sleep. Your tissues need to heal. There's a lot of kind of energy and nutrients needed, you know, for healing in the body alone. And then obviously breastfeeding. Not only have we grown this little human, now I need to kind of feed the human. And actually, I think people don't realize, they think, you know, obviously pregnancy takes an enormous amount, but postpartum, the requirements of macronutrients and energy is actually four times more than pregnancy.
Wow, really?
And I think I read something that the protein requirements of a postpartum woman higher than the average female athlete.
Gosh, it's amazing. You don't realize the pressure it, you know, you know it puts a pressure on the body, but you don't realize how big that pressure is, do you? It's, you know, it's incredible. What things can people do during this postpartum phase? What can they do in this trimester four to, you know, to look after themselves?
So I think the key with this is planning ahead before a birth. You know, obviously when your baby's here, like, if, you know, there's not any time to kind of factor that in, especially in terms of cooking. So, you know, I definitely recommend way in advance of the baby coming, just start batching things, or, you know, if you're making dinner, make more, and just freezing. So you've got a real freezer full of nutrient dense foods, and, you know, things that you're looking at, the things that are really going to help. So are collagenous, collagen rich food, so kind of slow cooked meat is really good. So iron stores are going to be low, B12 is going to be low. I mean, all your nutrients are going to be low, but kind of what the kind of body can take, you know, those kind of slow cooked meats are the most kind of bioavailable and most easily, you know, digested, so the body can kind of take, you know, as more nutrients as it can out of those. So yeah, looking at making warming stews and lots of slow cooked meat. Things like bone broth can be really good. So, you know, it's all that, those foods that are going to really help with the kind of tissue repair, topping up those nutrients. So yeah, you know, just really kind of filling your freezer with things. And obviously oily fish, seafood, again, it's all the kind of animal products. And I think that's another thing to kind of mention. We haven't touched on is vegetarian, vegan diets and pregnant and trimester zero preconception, pregnancy and postpartum. So even if you are kind of eating all those foods, you know, you are going to really need to top those up. But if you're kind of a vegetarian or vegan, it is going to be very difficult to maintain decent levels of nutrients throughout a pregnancy. As we say, you know, the baby kind of gets all it needs, but if anything that's kind of not coming in from the diet or is already in stores, it draws from bones, teeth. We don't want them to be coming out with lower density bones and our teeth in there. So, you know, I generally don't recommend a vegan or vegetarian diet in pregnancy, postpartum. Obviously, you know, I always support my clients, you know, whatever they want to do, but I just don't feel you can get what you need for yourself and your baby without eating animal products. If it's kind of for ethical reasons, that's very different. But I think, you know, a lot of people, which is kind of shifting, I think, but, you know, there was a huge trend towards vegan diets and for health. But again, that people aren't really realizing or weren't kind of seeing, you know, this kind of side of it, preparing the body and kind of just going into pregnancy on a vegan diet and coming out the other end, yeah, with lots of kind of deficiencies, and does take such a long time to recover in that postpartum period. And I think that's another thing, you know, it takes about 2 years.
I was just going to ask you, how long are we talking for the postpartum period? What are we looking at? Because, you know, that sort of, you know, preconception, that sort of trimester zero, we sort of said 3, ideally 6 months, you know, how long is postpartum?
Yeah, and I don't think there's a definite answer for that, and it can vary obviously from woman to woman, but I think, you know, 2 years to really let nutrient stores come back up and for everything else to settle, you know, your pelvic floor, I mean, your body has just gone through such an enormous change, and then you're undertaking, you know, the most intense time of your life, and, you know, looking after a tiny human whilst obviously trying to recover and breastfeed and nourish, you know, a baby in that way as well. And yeah, it takes time. And there's a bit of a narrative about, you know, bouncing back and getting your body back in, you know, 30 days, or it's just not realistic. And I think that's important for kind of people to kind of expect it to take long and kind of embrace that. Take it easy. And I think doing the freezer, batch cooking and all of that. But, you know, when the baby's here, trying to ask friends, family, you know, to bring food, to cook food, to bring food over. And I think that's another thing that just makes that postpartum so difficult now, especially in, you know, our Western culture, is that we don't have that village, we don't have that kind of community. And, you know, in a lot of cultures, you know, postpartum women, you know, their feet don't touch the ground, you know, there's women around them cooking for them, you know, supporting them as they're feeding the baby. And there's that recognition that, yeah, that like the mum needs to be nourished.
It takes a village. That's what they always said, right? It takes a village to raise a child. And yeah, we've lost that community, haven't we?
Yeah, we have. And, you know, a lot of couples don't have family near them, they don't have that support, they don't have that. That's another contributor, I think, to women kind of struggling more in postpartum and not really having that time to nourish themselves and to be kind of taken care of as well.
Yeah. So if there's people listening to this, maybe, you know, whatever stage that they are at, whether they are wanting to get pregnant now or in that sort of postpartum phase, what would be your sort of top tips to people? What would you want somebody to take away from this conversation? And, you know, and what would you want them to sort of learn from this?
Yeah, I guess it's just kind of seeing how each trimester has a knock-on effect on the other trimester. So, you know, starting in trimester zero and really taking a step back and doing that preparation before starting, you know, to try for a baby will just stand you in such good stead for pregnancy and for postpartum. And just, I guess, just recognising how big an undertaking making human is for the body and for health. And I think also that piece about, you know, it's not just about getting pregnant, but also looking at the health of the child and future generations as well. And yeah, just kind of seeing how it all pieces together.
Yeah, I think that's a really important message for people to understand. Emily, thank you so much for joining me today on the podcast. It's been really great to have this conversation with you. I think it's hugely beneficial for women listening, and I think it's a great message that you're trying to spread and raise awareness of for women, but also, like you said, for the men as well. We will link the course that you mentioned, the Fertile Foods course. We'll link that below this episode, and we'll put other links as well so that people can find you on, you know, Instagram and things like that, and find your website if they want to reach out to you. Then all of that will be below the episode. But thank you so much for joining me today and having this conversation.
Pleasure. Thank you for having me. It's been great.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Good Health Podcast. Do share the episode with anyone who you think it may benefit or who may enjoy it. And help me spread the word by rating the episode or leaving a review. If you want more, you can find other episodes in the series on your podcast app or sign up to my free newsletter. Not only will you get information on new episodes launching, but we cover lots of health topics with the Ask Nicole section where you can send in your questions, my favorite recipes, my favorite products, tips and tricks to help you on the road to good health, and much more. You can sign up free of charge at nicolegoodhealth.com/newsletter, also linked below. I hope you have a lovely week. Don't forget to hit subscribe, and I'll see you next time.